Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy
way. Welcome, this is Eric. Not in a
creepy this way. Is brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1967 classic movie Valley of the Dolls, directed by Mark Robson, who also directed the movie Peyton Place, 1957, The Inn of the Sixth Happiness, and the movie Earthquake. This, by the way, did not do him any career favors. In fact, this movie, I don't think, did anybody any career favors.
Go figure.
Now, had you seen this movie before?
Never.
Okay, this is on my list. And I know that Roger Ebert wrote Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which, by the way, is a psychedelic movie that has nothing to do with this.
He wrote it?
Yes, he did. And he and Russ Meyer directed it. He wrote it.
Okay.
Which only goes to show you that movie reviewers don't always make the best actual artists, like critics. Anyway. And actually, Roger Ebert's movie for this, he gave it like 2 stars out of 5, I think, or 4.
That's generous.
Well, he actually described a scene in the movie using the wrong character. It's like, oh, you're not paying enough attention. Now, granted, he didn't have the internet, but come on. So there's that. But first impression, what did you think of 1967's Valley of the Dolls? Had you heard anything about it, and what did you think?
Nope. I'd heard nothing about it before. There are parts of this movie that were excerpted that are used for comedic effect in a radio program I used to listen to. But,
like Sparkle Neely Sparkle?
No, it was like Hollywood doesn't want you. The speech closer to the end.
Yes. Did you know anything about, Valley of the Dolls, the book?
Nope.
Did you know anything about the book, the television program, or the movie Peyton Place?
Nope.
Okay. This movie has a lot to do with Peyton Place. Let me just give you my wasn't there, did a little bit of research, not great history lesson. So Jacqueline Suzanne, who's the author, she was an actress in the vein of, say, an Anne. And she worked between like 1930 and 1950 or something. And so she wrote this book, and it was not critically well received, but it was a very popular because it was sort of scandalous. It was kind of sexy for the time. The movie is kind of sexy for the time, sort of. Like this, the late 60s was where you started to see actual like Sam Peckinpah type violence and lots of boobs and stuff. And this was not quite that, but it was in that direction. They talked a lot about sex in this movie without showing really any of it. It was also kind of the, for Patty Duke, it was the movie that she was using to change, to make her career evolve from being, you know, the set of twins on the teeny bopper Patty Duke show and turn her into a surly, swearing, horrible person. It also was going to star Judy Garland, who was actually hired for the movie and was fired on set for allegedly being too drunk to perform, to come out of her trailer.
That's almost shocking. Nowadays, they would just call you Robert Downey Jr.
Well, yeah. Well, and Patty Duke actually said later that that Mark Robson, the director, was the meanest son of a bitch she'd ever worked with.
Really?
Yeah, that he's like, she was she was, it was her opinion that he just treated Julie Garland like shit. Like he'd have her on call, like, to show up for the call sheet at 6 a.m. and not shoot any scenes with her till 4 p.m. just to punish her for being, great. And she's like, and Patty Duke was like, this is like one of the most talented performers, you know, you'll ever meet. And she's being treated like crap.
That's pretty predatory.
But most of the actors in this movie, when interviewed about this movie later, straight up called it a piece of shit.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes me feel better, question mark.
Well, okay. So your first impression, did you enjoy it? By the end of the movie, you watched it through the end, right?
Yes.
Okay. When you were done, were you happy that you watched it?
No.
Did you enjoy any of this movie?
No.
Oh, that's so terrible. I'm sorry. But
the third time that fucking Dionne Warwick song played, I was ready to gouge my ears out. Gotta get off, gonna get, have to get off from this ride. And don't get me wrong, I love me some Dionne Warwick. I have a couple Dionne Warwick albums. I love her singing. That song, which they apparently, I didn't do any research, so I'm making this completely up out of my own ass, but that may have been the only song they could afford because they spent all the money paying her to create it, so they used the fuck out of that song.
Well, the person who did the music for this movie is Andre Previn. Do you recognize that name?
I do, but it was also John Williams.
Yeah, yeah. I blame Andre Previn's wife, Dory, who was a lyricist, and he was married to her and then cheated on her with Mia Farrow and then married Mia Farrow slightly after this movie.
The song was for like a after school coming of age, lost my virginity to the high school football star song.
Well,
it had no place in this movie. It was surreal and how wrong it was.
See, when I think of 1967, I think of the Monterey Pop Festival. I don't think of songs that don't use complete sentences. Like for instance, let me read you the lyrics, okay, of that Dionne Warwick song, the theme from The Valley of the Dolls. Mm-hmm. The lyrics are, gotta get off, gotta get, have to get off from this ride, gotta get hold, gotta get, need to get hold of my pride. Where did I get? Where did I? How was I caught in this game? When will I know? Where will I? How will I think of my name? When did I stop feeling sure, feeling safe, and start wondering why? Wondering why? Is this a dream? Am I here? Where are you? What's in the back of the sky? Why do we cry?
I would submit to you, had John Williams done like a Jaws score to this, I would have made it a 1,000% better movie. Dun it. Dun it. Dun it. Dun it. Even if that fucking 3-chord motherfucking goddamn song from Eyes Wide Shut would be better.
Yes.
But this was, it was so awful. It was awful.
But later, there's a song just like it called I'll Plant My Own Tree.
The music that is performed in this is dreck.
It is so bad.
Of the worst proportions. And again, I love Patty Duke. So seeing her was like, she was the highlight. I was like, she's so young and her voice doesn't even sound like I'm used to. And
no,
she's
not her voice.
Oh, I know it's not her voice. No, but I meant her speaking voice.
Yes.
No, I don't think anybody's singing voice was there.
No,
singing. Was
they're
there,
all yeah. Dubbed.
Right, of course. To no surprise. I would have given them credit if it had all been sung by Dionne Warwick and she had just dubbed over everybody. That would have been hilarious to me.
By the third time, though, that Dionne Warwick started singing, I was done with Dionne Warwick.
I believe I said that.
Yeah, I wanted her to finish the sentence.
I just wanted her to stop singing that song.
Yeah, I wondered to myself, I was wondering, again, Monterey Pop Festival, I'm thinking of Jimi Hendrix and The Who, and I'm thinking about, you know, like California country rock is sort of starting and getting popular. And then we have this weird, like, show tune, sort of. But from the reviews, none of these sounded like actual show tunes. And then you have all the art bullshit. Like, the fact that Susan Hayward sang, "I'm gonna plant my tree." Oh, sorry, "I'll plant my own tree." In front of that weird mobile where she's like, looks like she's dodging to not get hit by those big plastic gels.
It looks like a creature from the, I think, the first season of Star Trek Next Generation.
Yeah, or even when Patty Duke was singing her song on the telethon.
The cystic fibrosis telethon?
Yes, with Joey Bishop as the, she, first of all, because it's not her voice, it's sort of the exuberance with which Patty Duke actually gives all of her performance. She is overdoing everything.
Everyone is overdoing everything in this movie.
No, Sharon Tate is not overdoing anything. Sharon Tate is barely doing anything. Anyway, so let's just get into it.
Ah, oh, Jennifer, your breast is too lumpy.
This is a 2 hour and like 3 minute soap opera.
It's not good enough to be a soap opera.
Here are the characters, the main characters, and we'll go through the plot, probably yada-yadding a little bit of it, but we've got...
thank God.
We've got Anne Wells, who's played by Barbara Parkins, and she's from TV's Peyton Place. All of these people, except for, of course, Sharon Tate, poor one out for Sharon Tate, had relatively long careers, but nobody did really a ton of important stuff after this movie, with the possible exception of Patty Duke. So Barbara Parkins, who, by the way, I thought was lovely. I mean, I realize that's why they hired her, but she was the most attractive actress in this movie. But she plays like the classic beauty, classy girl, right? Who is coming from a small New England town and going to New York. And then she meets, we have another character. I guess we'll just go along with the plot. So Anne moves from the country to New York. No, not the country like, where have you come from? Where have you gone? Where have you come from? Cotton Eye Joe. But the country like, you know, New England, like what's the town? Cabot Cove?
Lawrenceville. Oh,
I was thinking of where all the murders, the murder capital.
Cabot Cove, Maine.
Yes. She comes from what is it called? Lawrencetown,
Lawrenceville.
Massachusetts or something. Lawrenceville. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So, she takes the train to the big city. By the way, this is takes place in the 60s, even though the Jacqueline Suzanne novel takes place just after World War II. So there's a little bit of that. Anyway, so she goes to New York and she goes to a woman's hotel, which I thought was sort of fun. And she has a temp agency or a job placement agency or whatever you call it, employment agency, who sends her to work for an entertainment lawyer because she can type. Her shorthand's not great, but oh well. And then she has to deliver some contracts to a renowned Broadway performer, Helen Lawson, played by Susan Hayward, who is, by the way, an Oscar winner for I Want to Live, and is super, her face is super recognizable. But I found myself, a lot of these people, I found myself looking them up on IMDb and thinking, oh, maybe I mistook them for somebody else.
Yeah, I had a fair bit of that.
And maybe it's because they all appeared on the Love Boat at some time. I didn't actually do that cross-checking, but anyway, so Susan Hayward, by the way, she's fun. She's having a good time, I think. So she plays her character is based basically on Ethel Merman, who here's another thing I found out. My history of classic actresses is not as broad as I thought it was, because I got Ethel Merman and Esther Williams confused. And I know it's because Esther Williams does the synchronized swimming and Ethel Merman sounds like a mermaid. And maybe that's why I get them confused. But apparently Ethel Merman was kind of a bawdy, crass, larger than life character who actually would cut people or ask that people's songs be removed from her musical if they would perhaps upstage her. which, by the way, is what Susan Hayward does as Helen Lawson. They've got this this song in the show for a young upstart, Neely O'Hara, played by Patty Duke.
The ingenue.
Yes. But she's like a scrapper. Like if Anne is sort of a classic beauty, Patty Duke, or as Neely O'Hara, Neely is sort of a scrapper. She's like sung and danced and whatever since she was a little kid, and she's just sort of a Tonya Harding, Mary Lou Retton kind of character.
Ooh.
Like she's spunky. Actually, maybe I shouldn't combine Mary Lou Retton and Tonya Harding together, but you know.
Oh, I was saying you shouldn't combine Tonya Harding and spunky.
Well, there's the video. Let's go to the video.
You know, she lives in these parts.
Oh, yeah. So. By all accounts, she's probably a riot. She won Worst Chef Celebrity Edition and was quite charming doing it.
Worst Chef?
Yeah, Worst Chef, where it was Tyler Florence and Anne Burrell teaching Jimmy Walker and Tonya Harding and like LaToya Jackson and stuff how to cook shrimp. More or less.
So she won it, meaning she became good?
Yes. Yes. She beat out all the other rivals.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so we see Neely O'Hara, who's she's performing, and you see she's singing her heart out, and she's young. And
well, someone's singing their heart out.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, Patty Duke was disappointed because she's like, you know, the whole thing is this girl is enthusiastic. They could have just used my own voice. And in fact, she actually has an album that they released. Patty Duke sings songs from Valley of the Dolls. And I think one of the blurbs on that album was, the thing about Patty Duke's voice is she's so enthusiastic. We just get a backhanded compliment.
Yeah, that's no Casey Kasem.
Well, but imagine like Jennifer Hudson or somebody modern with a beautiful voice, or Christina Aquilingua or whatever, this belts out the, how would I, what would I, should I plant my own tree in a bush, come dance with me for only one day? How will I, where will I, who am I? Word salad.
Okay, you're just Shatnering it up now.
They were Shatnering it up. Shatner would have been perfect in this movie. He really would have.
He would have probably improved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that.
Get a hold of yourself, Neely.
You know who else I would have appreciated? Buddy Hackett.
Yeah, maybe. So
Bill Winters.
Yeah, who's Bill Winters?
I don't know.
Okay. Bill Withers. Is he in We'd Lean on Me?
Yeah, I was thinking of somebody else.
Okay. Edgar Winter?
No.
Frankenstein?
Who's the old man that was always with Buddy Hackett? Jonathan Winters.
Oh, yeah, Jonathan Winters. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. See, aphasia hits us all. See, this movie ate my brain cells.
So Helen is torpedoing Neely O'Hara's career, and Neely O'Hara is, her boyfriend is Martin Milner, who, you and Drew, I bet you don't remember Adam 12. Do you remember Adam 12?
I do.
Okay, so Martin Milner was half of Adam 12.
Oh.
So that's where, you know, he recognized him from. But he's her boyfriend, and I don't know, maybe like sort of her manager or something. Anyway, we see during this whole thing where Anne goes to deliver these papers to Helen, we meet Neely, but we also meet the third ingenue girl, Jennifer North, played by Sharon Tate, who we know from The Fearless Vampire Killers and being a murder victim. And Jennifer...
Okay, just note to the audience who might not be aware.
Well, okay, hold on. The audience who listens to this show is highly aware of Sharon Tate. Sharon Tate is having something of a moment.
Not necessarily. Not everyone is
ultra aware. Sharon Tate is one of the main characters in the new Quentin Tarantino movie out this week.
What?
Yes. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
What?
Yes.
Isn't that with Brad Pitt?
I'm not sure if he's in it or not.
I
think he is.
He's in it with the pit bull. How is it... Okay, but back up. Hang on.
You'll have to look it up. One of the main characters is Sharon Tate.
How?
Because it takes place in Hollywood in 1970.
Okay. All right. Continue. Just so you know, I'm having to break into my airline bottles of booze just to get through this.
Okay. So we have the three ladies. We have Anne, again, who is our entry character. She's an outsider, but she has classic good looks that come to her advantage later. And we have Neely, who is, again, she's a young, spunky kid getting into the game, but she's got a lot of drive and a lot of heart, and she'll make her way to the top. And then we have Jennifer. And Jennifer is sort of sad because Jennifer is a tall, blonde, fairly busty for the time, for sure, airhead with no real talent. And she's, or maybe that's what she is perceived as, and you takes on as her persona or whatever. But sadly, in this movie, Sharon Tate, especially in the beginning, like toward the end, she actually has some scenes that she has to do some acting. But in the very beginning, she delivers her lines in such a way as you think maybe she's like reading off of cue cards, but they're like really scribbled that are hard to read.
maybe she needed glasses and it was too fuzzy. She couldn't make it out.
Yeah, but it looks kind of bad. But we have, now in the book, I'm told, that you understand that Jennifer and Anne and Neely are super close friends. In the movie, it's not that clear. In the movie, it seems like they're just acquaintances.
Well, the movie was so disjointed that I assumed that they were close friends because that was what was implied by their dialogue, but it's nowhere exemplified in the movie. But
there's almost never a time when they're all three together enjoying each other's company.
But they reference each other and talk about one another. So I figured out quickly that they were supposed to be friends, but there was no foundation for such. So
Anne, after meeting all these people, goes back to her office and tells her crusty old boss about Helen, who she refers to as an evil queen bitch. And she discovers that besides her old entertainment lawyer boss, he has a partner whose name is Lion Burke, played by Paul Burke. And he, by the way, is C.C. Capwell from TV's Santa Barbara.
That was Jed Allen.
Paul Burke.
So he was the first CC, because CC was Jed Allen in the last 5 or 6 years.
Okay, yeah, you'll have to do that. People, Santa Barbara fans, you've already heard the theme song.
So he was the brain aneurysm CC Capwell, pre coming out of coma. Jed Allen would have been post coming out of coma. And I'm so sad that I know all
of
this.
No, it's okay. No, that's why we're here. So he was also in 1968's Thomas Crown Affair, which I'm told is a good movie, but I have never seen. I'm also told that the remake with Rene Russo and James Bond was really good, too.
Mm. By the way, this is now the second airline bottle I'm opening.
Okay. We don't advocate alcoholism here, people. If you know, some would say that you could take steps to avoid watching this movie. I might suggest 12 of them.
Very good.
Anyway.
I would rather have gone to an AA meeting than watch this movie.
So Neely and Mel get married, and Neely starts her career, even though she is not allowed in the Broadway thing because Helen torpedoes her. She ends up going on this telethon and singing this stupid song. Do it.
Could be possible. How would I know? So I'll try it and give it a go. Hey, could be the day, baby, when I turn out okay like a winner. But luck won't say yes, baby, unless you say so too. If you say go to it, I'll do it. I'll do it for
At one point, when she sings her song, she's like flapping around and like doing jumping jacks while she's singing because she has so much, gusto. But she's wearing two beaded necklaces. At one point, they actually, one goes around each breast. It was weird.
I don't know what you would like me to say to that. I didn't even notice it.
Anyway, so she's getting lots of notes for being an up-and-comer. So she is off to Hollywood, and Anne falls in love, has a meet cute, dropping her purse, and starts an affair, I guess, well, because she was engaged, but she starts an affair with her boss.
But she takes Lyon. The pin off, the blue towel.
Yeah, she does it. She debases herself by sleeping with a guy who is never going to commit.
It was the 60s, women's liberation.
No, the beginning of the women's liberation.
But still, sisters can do it for themselves.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But the problem is, in this movie, sexuality gets punished. Although, in the book, it gets punished worse. Like, this movie has, theoretically, a happy ending, which Jacqueline Suzanne was unhappy about. She's like, you do not have to go in and put a happy ending on my story. My story was made dark for a reason. Anyway, so Lyon makes it clear he is a bachelor. He will not marry her. So she has been warned, but falls in love anyway. So they make sweet, sweet love with the blue towel. Or, sorry, they make sweet, sweet love and there's a blue towel nearby.
I'm going to say that's going to chafe.
And she, okay, here's the problem with Barbara Parkins. Barbara Parkins, like, I'm going to accuse Patty Duke of overacting. I think it was probably directed that way, but she was overacting every single thing she did. The problem with Barbara Parkins is she was basically underacting everything. She looked like she was on the dolls. She was on some serious downers. And
I don't know.
Sharon Tate was acting like she had had a lobotomy.
Well, she was constantly having to pay for her mother, and that was stressing her out.
Yeah, and she relied on the kindness of old men to escort her around and give her gifts. Because she wasn't really talented enough to get a full-time job. And all she had to offer was her body. Anyway, so Anne and Lyon are having this affair, but Anne is feeling cheap and used. But she gets an opportunity to model for a cosmetics company. Which allows us... By the way, I think before this, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, but... We get this when Neely starts to hit become very popular. There's a Neely montage where it shows her working out and then all these outfits and stuff. And it's very 60s montage. But then when Anne becomes the Gillian girl or whatever.
Yes.
She has a montage. Mm-hmm. I felt bad because Sharon Tate didn't get a montage.
No, but she got that extra almost naked exposition at the end. Jennifer.
So we see, my legs. I can't feel my legs. Anyway, okay. So Anne is now a model, a famous model, equivalent of a supermodel. She's everywhere, you know. In the meantime, we have Jennifer, who is wooed by a nightclub singer whose name is Tony Pilar, played by Tony Scotti.
Whose singing was so off-key and bad that it actually made Jesse, like, scream out in pain.
It was bad. It was very bad. And also, and I think this is from the book, too. It turns out Tony's character has a flaw. He is sick. He has a disease. But in the book, I guess it's made pretty clear that he's a dummy to begin with. Like, he and Jennifer deserve to be together because he is just as dumb as she is. So, but his career is going great. But he's managed by his sister, Miriam, played by Lee Grant. And Lee Grant, by the way, I think she steals the show. She's the only one doing real acting in this movie.
She's almost in a different movie.
Yeah, I think so. She's in a darker movie.
She's very much. See, that subplot, I would have much more appreciated that story.
That she was managing Tony's career knowing that he was probably going to come down with Huntington's disease.
She was the sister that was taking care of her brother, and she knew that he needed tended to and that it was probably a matter of her time before he had something befall him in an unfortunate way, and she was not progressing in her life much because she was taking care of him in advance.
Exactly. So she came off as a weirdo creep by being jealous of all his, like, his lovers or whatever. But it wasn't because she wanted to be his lover. It's because she didn't want him to get married and try to have kids.
The kids thing is what she was after. So,
but also, I mean, you know, she knew her brother was eventually going to get super sick, and you know, you wouldn't want to be married to somebody who's super sick if you could help it. So why not just avoid it?
Well, I think moreover, she was concerned that they were going to inflict it on the kids.
Yeah. Plus, she had to be in control of his money because he was going to need a lot of money because he was going to die a slow, horrible, expensive death.
Yes.
Which is a very dramatic thing.
And it makes her fairly noble.
Oh, yeah.
She's the only noble one in all of this movie.
She's the best character, and she's the best actress in this movie.
Yes, hands down.
We have a lot of famous mothers. We've got Patty Duke is the mother of Sean Astin, who, by the way, he found out later in life, that his father was not John Astin or whatever his name was, but really her husband beforehand.
Oops. 23andMe?
What can you do? Yeah. But Lee Grant, you know who she's the mother of?
Cary Grant?
She's the mother of one of my favorite pink ladies, Marty Maraschino, Dinah Manoff. And also, Lee Grant was blacklisted for failing to testify against her husband at the House Un-Americans Committee.
Oh, the McCarthy trials. Oh.
So she didn't work for like 12 years after those.
Sons of bitches.
Exactly. So, Jennifer, remember Jennifer and Tony, they get married. By the way, in the book, Tony really likes to have anal sex with Jennifer. That's just, it made it really shocking. I know. Luckily, the movie does not take that particular end of it.
Put the boogie in your butt.
Exactly.
Put a dime, put a quarter, put a nickel. Sure do tickle.
In the butt. To the beat. So anyway, now we move forward to Neely's fame has kind of gotten ahead of her a little bit. She goes to the movies, goes to Hollywood, but she's now addicted to pills, which she calls dolls. And it sabotages her life.
That was distractingly awful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, her overacting
dolls,
that she was...
My dolls, yeah. The dolls. No, they're just the whole mechanism. Yes. Like, yeah. There was no need for that.
Yeah. Speaking of things
you might as well have said... You might as well have said the whole title in the movie. As if you needed any less subtlety in this movie, calling them the dolls was like, oh, because I couldn't have figured that out.
Well... Okay, in the book, it's much more clear that all three of the women are addicted to the pills for various reasons.
I got that.
Yeah. But, and by the way, when they did the ads for this movie, they had these really slick ads that say, she takes the red ones for to get up in the morning, and she takes the blue ones for coming down at night, and she takes the yellow ones for heartbreak. But it's funny, is they actually showed one of the women that they showed in the ad was Susan Hayward, whose character Helen is the character in the book that doesn't take any pills and scoffs at it. So apparently the ad department didn't watch the movie either. But anyway, by the way, we'll get to this first because I do have a thing about the word the dolls. But anyway, she is addicted to pills and she eventually is really vicious and unpredictable and very unlike her pair of twin cousins or whatever in the Patty Duke show. And she loses Mel, Adam 12. And she's now having an affair with a Hollywood designer named Ted Casablanca, who has a reputation.
What reputation is that?
Well,
you don't want to say it.
No, I'm going to say it.
It's fine. Okay. I'll take one for the team. You know, it's my team anyway. You know,
because so he's something of a
faggot.
Yes.
They made great pains to say that again and again and again.
In the novel. They say like fag or faggot like 100 times, but they only say the word dolls like 25 times.
That's somehow not surprising. Yes. I think it was probably meant for shock value. But,
completely.
But then again, I don't know that it was shocking at that time. I think it's shocking now to straight people. But I don't think then that it would have been even controversial.
Well, okay, I have another Esther Williams, Ethel Merman problem. Oh, no. Do you know there's a quite gay, like Hollywood reporter named Ted Casablanca in modern times who was born in like 1960?
No, yeah. Get out.
Yeah. So, and they, in the movie, they always called him Ted Casablanca. They never called him Ted.
J.M. Bullock.
Yes. Yes. Oh, by the way, he was actually one of the people that was against Tanya Harding in the cooking show.
Wow. I can't believe that. Okay. That's.
I'm telling you, it's good stuff.
Wow. Okay. Tyler Florence. He's turned into a big puffy bastard.
Yeah, it comes and goes. Do you watch the show Nailed It? The Netflix?
No. Okay. No, I can't watch most of that stuff. But I want to say Tyler Florence was on one of the first shows on the Cooking Network, the Food Network, whatever it was in the beginning. And it was I don't even remember the title of it, but I just watched it religiously because it was like Food 911, I think, where he would come and help people fix things, fix their meals and get them right.
He's a good host.
I like him, and I've used some of his recipes. He was this skinny guy that would come in, and he was really genuine, and he always smiled, and he was a great guy. But then he turned into this puffy bastard, and like, wow, you're eating too much.
As we get older, and now he eats more foie gras at his new dinners.
Well, I'm pretty round these days myself. So.
The reason I brought up Nailed It is because we have Nicole Byer, who's a very large black woman, but that's also her personality.
I've seen her on The Fix.
Yeah, she's dirty, but very funny.
Yeah, The Fix is a, I think it's a Netflix show with Jimmy Carr as the host. It has like D.L. Hughley and Jimmy Carr and then a couple other comedians every week, and they address a problem and they give them comedic takes on how to resolve the problem.
Nicole Byer is really funny, but I'm afraid she's going to do a Chris Farley because she likes drugs and she likes to drink a lot and she's really heavy and, you know.
Well.
Again, I'm not going to throw stones. I live in a fat house. The reason is Jacques, I can't remember his last name. Your mother would know it, actually. But Jacques, the French pastry chef who is her, you know, her expert co-host, he was really puffy in the, like, he was legitimately, a middle-aged or higher kind of fat guy, fat French chef. He lost, like, 100 pounds between the first season and the second season. It's incredible. It's like a whole different person.
Thinner.
Yeah, it makes me think. No, but it's not in a creepy way. It actually, it works for him. So.
It wasn't Jacques Pepin, was it?
No. I want to say Jacques Florence, but that's Tyler Florence. I don't know. And what's funny is Jacques actually seems pretty smitten by Nicole, so it's very cute.
And are you sure? Are you sure it wasn't Jacques Pepin?
It could be. Is he a French pastry chef?
French American chef. Would you recognize a picture?
Yeah.
I don't know if this is going to do justice.
Oh, he's all washed out.
Yeah, I figured. All right.
Actually, just look up Nailed It, Jacques, and it will tell you.
Oh, it's Jacques Torres.
Jacques Torres, yes.
So that was going to be my second guess.
I said your mom would know it.
Mom!
So, Neely is now dating and hanging out with Ted Casablanca. A fag, but a rich one. That's what they call him.
Well, they say that, but turns out not so much.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Or, well, then again.
Who knows? I guess maybe he's bisexual. I think in the book or it's much more clear that he's trisexual. At least bisexual. Yeah. He'll try anything. So, anyway, Jennifer and Tony are married.
Ba-dum-dum.
They're having a great life because they are dumb.
Jennifer.
Marion lives with them and obviously imposes on her down their marriage. And they move to Los Angeles and they settle into a house and Jennifer's got her modeling career. It gets better. And Tony's career, though, has peaked and he wants to go over to the motion pictures, but he's not having the same success. So he's kind of he wants to be an actor and his sister keeps telling him, no, you need to sing and make money. And he's like, I don't want to sing. I want to act. And Jennifer's like, he wants to act. And Miriam is like, he needs to make money. And the reason, of course, we find out is because at a kind of an awkward scene where they're at some sort of like event and everybody's spilling out of the event.
Was it where she got her Grammy?
Oh, maybe, yes. When Neely escaped. Got her Grammy? Yeah.
Yeah. So Neely got, they're escaping and exiting out. Neely notices that they're coming for her, and she's like, oh, we gotta get, he wants a job, and he wants me to give him a job. We just gotta get out of here.
And it turns out that's exactly what they want anyway.
Yeah.
But not in an evil way, but makes her look kind of petty and like a bitch.
No, and then they get to the stairs, and Jennifer!
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not a good night for the Jennifer Tony clan, because...
Tony... Jennifer!
Because not only does so Neely not give them either the time of day or a job, but Tony's got the Jimmy legs, and turns out he's got the Huntington's disease, ALS. Or similar to ALS, I don't know. It's a rare motor neuron disease. Although it says a rare motor rutron disease. Is that a thing?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Anyway.
It doesn't sound right, but I'm not a geneticist or a neurologist, so.
Yeah, it turns out the disease is genetic, was passed down from Tony to from his father, and the father is dead. And by the way, Miriam has got a different father, so she's not worried about it.
Well, ALS and Huntington's are different, because Huntington's disease is it causes your brain cells to die, and ALS is sclerosis, so it's a little different.
Yeah,
it's a paralytic. I mean, your muscles seize and twitch.
Okay, I will defer to your medical knowledge.
No, I'm just saying that I'm just I wasn't trying to shame.
No, no, go ahead, hi hat me. That's fine.
Hi
hat you and your science.
Yes, me and my science, my fancy internet research.
Turns out this is all bad news all around because Miriam has to tell Jennifer what the scoop is. But Jennifer also has bad news because what she thought was maybe good news because she's always wanted to be a mother. She's pregnant.
Ruh-roh.
Yes. Anne and Lion, who apparently Lion cheats all the time anyway. But
the Lion cheats tonight?
Yes. Wee dee 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 dee. Wee mama way. I think I heard an interview, maybe on Larry King Radio from a long time ago, where one of the singers for, and I can't remember the name of the band, the Weavers, maybe? He's like, yeah, I'm the wee-dee-dee-dee guy. Excuse me? Yeah. I'm the one who started, wee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, wee mama way. And then now all the other guys come in, wee-ma-way. That's all. The Weavers.
I laughed.
Larry King. Chicago, you're on line two. Okay, so things are not happy in the Tony Miriam Jennifer house. Things are not happy in the Neely house because Neely is out of control with the drugs. And things are not happy in the Anne house because even though she has no expression during the entire movie, she is frustrated because Lion is cheating and stuff. And Neely shows up at her house one night and... she's all hopped up on the dolls, and she tells Anne that Jennifer called her wanting to know where she could get a gasp abortion.
Scandal.
Yes. Neely also offers Anne some of her pills to get her through her lonely period while Lion's gone, but Anne bitterly refuses. And then Neely has this conversation, and she confides to Anne that her marriage with Ted is on the rocks, and Anne encourages her to try and renew the spark in their relationship. So Neely returns home to try to renew the spark, but goes out to the swimming hole in the back. I'm sorry, the cement pond in the back, and see that Ted, not so faggy at all at this point, at least, because he's got a lady in the swimming pool that he's going to bone, and makes no bones about it. Neely's so hopped up from drugs, he says she won't even know that they're there.
Which indicates that perhaps this is a common thing.
Yes, exactly. So they have something of a fight. Because Neely is now a woman scorned. So she kicks... actually, she doesn't kick Ted out as much as she yells at Ted and then Ted leaves.
Yeah. She chucks a bottle of booze at him, which is alcohol abuse.
Yeah. Well, at first she pours it into the pool.
To sterilize it.
Yes. Neely now in a little bit of meta art imitating life. Neely is thrown off a film project because of her drunkenness and won't come out of her, won't show up for call times and won't come out of her trailer, much like Judy Garland is accused of.
Dun, dun, dun.
So then she sneaks out. Lion tries to get her to go to a sanitarium, but she sneaks off to San Francisco and goes incognito as much as you can when you speak all your lines at volume 9. And she has kind of a rough time in San Francisco, including having sex with strangers who steal her money.
It's almost like she drank herself into a stupor, right?
Oh, yeah. No, she was completely taken advantage of, but she did put herself in a vulnerable position. I don't advocate rape. I was going to say,
you don't blame the victim.
No, but she made some horrible choices, and she is horrified by these horrible choices. So she then goes to the sanitarium because she was actually picked up and taken to a hospital. So they transfer her to the sanitarium, and she has a nice little monologue about being in the sanitarium. But she also finds out that Tony is at the sanitarium.
Oh, this is the most.
It's the most soap opera thing.
I can't say it's the most worst thing of this movie, but it's not. So.
Well, at least he didn't have to do it on the stairs. But
Jennifer,
she and Tony sing this song that he has sung earlier in the movie, because again, every song in this movie is sung like 4 times. There's like 6 songs, and they're all sung a ton of times.
Economy of scale.
They apparently couldn't use periods because they never ended sentences. So,
well, they didn't have any periods because Jennifer was knocked up.
Oh, yes, poor Jennifer. Well, let's get back to Jennifer. So Jennifer is very upset because, of course, Tony's in the sanitarium and she's got to make money since he can't make any money and the sanitarium is expensive. So she begins taking pills and booze to help her cope. She is not nearly as dramatic as Patty Duke because, of course, like I said, I don't know if it was directed or not, but she seems like she doesn't have the tools to be quite that dramatic. But, and of course we feel sorry for Jennifer because Jennifer's mother is kind of leeching off of her and treats her poorly. And, she doesn't really have any self-esteem, and the man she loves is now in the hospital, and she had to have one of those abortions. And, then she turns to making art films with a sleazy French director. And I wondered if it was like, now, they're not suggesting that Roman Polanski is a sleazy European director, but no. Although I think she did have some nude scenes in The Fearless Vampire Killers. But she's got the integrity of doing the movies because she needs the money for Tony. So it's all for true love.
That's integrity?
Well, and then she finds out that she is locked in this contract with this unscrupulous director.
Ah, the French.
Yes. And he begins making like fairly hardcore art films, and she is completely numb by it. So, Neely then, she has a fresh outlook coming out of the sanitarium strong. And, but she makes this statement to Anne about stealing her man away because, Lion is still her manager, or is again her manager. By the way, I think in the book, there's a subplot that Neely becomes really fat during this period. Like, she gains a bunch of weight while she's, like, basically alcoholic before the sanitarium. And then she gets skinny and horny again, and that's why she prowls on Lion.
Ah, I see.
Weedy-deedy, indeed. So, basically, she's a horrible person and frankly tells Anne that she's sleeping with Lion. And, of course, he is because he's Lion and is a fucking horrible guy.
Now, no, wait a minute. What makes him a horrible guy? Because he clearly said, I don't commit.
True. But he knows he's making people unhappy. You're not really going to defend Lion in this, are you?
I'm only defending him as much as it takes two people to have a tragedy, so.
Well, okay, Lion is not a liar. But he is a cheater.
No, he's not a good human being. I'm make no illusion. I'm not standing up for him as a righteous, virtuous dude. I'm just saying, everyone knows that he's humping anything that has a pulse. So,
well, and that's it. When Anne reads in a gossip column in a newspaper that he's cheating on her and how she, by name, is a loser, she starts taking the dolls herself.
Does that, does stuff like that happen? In the 60s where they would name people like.
Oh, even before the 60s, yeah. Oh, lots of awful. Like Hedda Harper and all those people. Yes. Yeah. Bad. Well, that's, you know, again, do you remember the book Hollywood Babylon by Kenneth Anger?
I don't believe so.
Well, Hollywood Babylon was this book full of like juicy gossip that was. And lots of stuff was absolutely not true. Like, I think it suggested that Annabelle and Lily and Gish were lesbian sisters and talked a lot in graphic detail about the whole Fatty Arbuckle thing, including repeating all the stuff that actually wasn't true about him raping the girl.
So it was the Inquirer of its time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And there was like, I think in that book, you could see pictures of the Black Dahlia body, so it was all gruesome and lurid as well. But yeah, there was a lot of stuff. And you all remember LA Confidential, right?
I was going to mention Tinseltown, which is the book that I read. So
oh yeah, maybe. Oh, there's lots of intrigue, and of course, with like all the Hearst papers and all that stuff. Again, we'll talk about Citizen Kane here soon. Back to this movie.
Have you seen Citizen Kane?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
It'll be interesting to talk about because I'm not sure it holds up, frankly. I think it's really interesting, but I'm not sure as a movie whether it's going to be a very pleasurable experience. We'll see.
Okay. I was going to say, when was the last time you saw it?
It's been a while. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe 10 years, maybe more.
I've seen it more recently than that, so.
Did you enjoy it?
I did.
Oh, okay. I mean, Orson Welles is amazing.
Yes.
In all sorts of ways. But anyway, we'll have a whole podcast on Citizen Kane.
The whole Mark and Mindy thing is what really threw me for a loop. So.
Yeah. Well, again, you get old.
That Frozen Pea commercial is hilarious. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing is that on one hand, you want Orson Welles to like die at 35. Like when he's at the top, when he's just
frozen
like
in
genius.
Time.
Yeah.
Frozen.
Because if he had died at 35, he would have been like an outlawed genius rebel guy.
Right.
But
right.
Then he becomes an old fat guy and it's.
He would have been Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
Rather than.
I mean, he would be absolutely revered. Like he would be Hollywood royalty.
Yeah. Rather than Marlon Brando.
Yeah. Even Marlon Brando, if he had died earlier too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. Yeah, we don't like our stars old and fat.
To quote a Blondie song, die young, stay pretty.
Yeah. Leave a good corpse, right? Live hard, die young, leave a good corpse.
I'm now out of alcohol.
As they pass the cheeks over the gums. Watch out. Marlon, here he comes. I don't know.
Okay. What? So, is that like a Marlon Brando collecting turds reference?
No, that's just an old toast, right?
Oh, okay. I got nothing. You're on your own.
So Anne is all in Los Angeles, and she's reading about how she's a loser because her husband's cheating on her, or her boyfriend is cheating.
I was going to say, not her husband.
No, not at all. And she starts taking the pills. But back in New York, Lyon is trying to renew Neely's career, but he also has to go to this new Broadway show opening because it's the party is in honor of Helen Lawson's new show. And he tells Neely, you cannot come to this party. You will have your own coming out party in like a week and a half or 2 weeks or something. This is not your time. Stay low, be cool. But Neely can't stay low and be cool because Neely is a narcissistic doll head. So we see this big party and Neely comes and steals the spotlight from Helen. And then they have a scene in the bathroom. And I want to say Carol Burnett did this scene in her show.
She flips her wig.
Oh, yeah. Literally takes a wig off.
Yeah.
By the way, here's a little trivia. Susan Hayward, they wanted her to wear a white wig underneath the brown wig. And she's like, no, I'll dye my hair. It'll be fine. It'll look more authentic that way. So there you go. So it's a silly, fun scene. They're having the cat fight in the ladies' lounge. She's gonna go out the way she came in with her dignity. By the way, there are some quotable lines in this movie. Wait,
very, very Norma Desmond.
Very Norma Desmond. Absolutely. There's a couple of lines like "Sparkle, Neely, sparkle," which Neely explains that's why she has to take the pills to get going in the morning. The other one was, and I had to look it up, that Jennifer says in the beginning about, because she goes out with different guys all the time, and I think Lion makes fun of her. Somebody makes fun of her, and she's like, "Hey, at night, all cats are gray." So I had to look up what "at night, all cats are gray" means. Do you have any idea where this came from?
Nope.
Let me educate you.
Okay.
Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, God.
Benjamin Franklin, I mean, he may not have originated this, but he made it popular because that was what he would say as far as the, like, why he would go and have sex with older women. Because, you know, in the dark, doesn't matter what they look like. The most crass thing ever, but it's pretty funny.
So Ben Franklin was a member of the Any Hole Will Do party?
Oh, yeah. Ben Franklin was a big drinker and a big, I don't know if he had a, if he was like a Milton Berle type, but he definitely got around. Yeah. I think maybe he could have died. I think he died because he got sick because he was on the way home from his lover's house in the snow or something. I don't know. Maybe that's, we'll have to look that up.
What?
Perhaps that's all fake. I don't know.
Fatty Arbuckle did what?
No, Fatty Arbuckle didn't do that, though.
I know.
It's a hit job. Just because you're fat does not mean you're a rapist. Although, again, I don't know nothing about nothing. So, Helen keeps her dignity, does not slip out the back, even though Neely tries to flush her wig down the toilet.
And throws it back because it doesn't go down.
Exactly. Back in Los Angeles, my notes say, Jennifer's story comes to a sudden and sad close when she is diagnosed with breast cancer. By the way, this is because Jacqueline Suzanne was diagnosed with breast cancer and eventually died of breast cancer. So this was top of mind when she wrote this into her characters. And of course, it's doubly sad for Jennifer because she has to have a mastectomy to save her life, but it will take away the only thing that makes her marketable or gives her any kind of self-worth.
Not nowadays with the internet, man. That freak porn's all over the place.
Yeah, well, it's hard to explain that. Yeah, so she's got a veggie husband, and she's going to be boobless. So decides to...
He's the Boca Burger.
It's awful. Awful. You're awful.
It's the Beyond Husband. Or is he the impossible husband? I don't know.
No, he's the original soy boy. So Jennifer does not have the sense of humor. So she overdoses on the dolls and commits suicide.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. So alone one day and devastated over Jennifer's death, as well as the loss of Lion to Neely, the drunken stone Anne wanders down the beach and passes out in the surf. Which looked kind of icky and cold.
Yeah, it reminded me of Creepshow.
I can hold my breath for a long time. She decides to... Pack it in. After she goes back into her house and smashes some furniture, she returns to New England, where she's welcomed back by her aunt. Who, by the way, I didn't know that was her aunt. I'm like, who is this old lady?
I thought it was Minnie Pearl.
So, in New York, Neely blows her big chance for her Broadway comeback and gets into an argument with Lion and basically says, who needs you? You're just an agent. And then Lion's like, yeah, not anymore, honey. So, Neely turns to a secret stash of pills. And she, when it comes time for her to perform, she's completely disoriented and unable to. So, they give her understudy a chance to perform. See, it's like bookends now. See how that works? Say
full circle.
Yeah, this is a soap opera. So she eventually spends the night getting drunk in a nearby tavern, and she's alone in an alley where she has this conversation where she yells out to all her friends and God and then herself in an overdramatic piece of crap.
How exactly are you arriving at that metric in comparison to the rest of the movie?
Well, that's the thing. It fits right in with this movie.
Yeah.
So the next morning, Helen Lawson has a candid conversation with Lyon where she predicts that Neely will come back again because she is talented, but ultimately she'll destroy herself. She also warns Lyon that he should stop being so careless with his love life and settle down with Anne before it's too late. So Lyon goes to travels upstate to the snowy hometown where he proposes marriage to Anne. But Anne's like, oh, fuck you. Too little, too late. Hit the bricks, Jack. And she feels nothing, which is not surprising because best I could tell in this movie, she has never felt anything about anything.
I'd say she started dead inside. She's the same.
Fairly flat affect the whole time. So at the end, Anne seems to be the only one among the three ladies who has learned from her experience. And she pours all her liquor bottles and pills down the sink and then walks off in a snowy landscape as she takes a stick and starts smiling and whacking the snow berms and stuff.
Because that's totally sane.
Yes. So it has a, you know, roughly happy ending for Anne. Apparently in the book is not so happy.
Not so happy for the stick.
And then we get to hear the third time of the song, Gotta Get Off, Gotta Get.
I guarantee you it is more than, I guarantee you it's more than the third time.
At least we didn't have to hear the I'll Plant My Own Tree song again.
My tree will not be just one in a row. My tree will offer shade when strangers go by. If you're a stranger, brother, well, so am I. Come tomorrow, all that I see is my tree. Oh, Lord, what a sight. Let someone stop me, and I will put up a fight. It's my yard, so I will try hard to welcome friends I have yet to know. Oh, I'll plant my own tree.
So, any more notes?
Yes.
Okay.
So, I started this with such high hopes. I wrote, Dionne Warwick! Exclamation mark. Sharon Tate! Exclamation mark. Yo, Joey Bishop! Exclamation mark. John Williams! Wow, quite the opening. And then, oh God, bad music, bad singing, incoherent plot. And then I just couldn't, there aren't many other notes other than I wrote down, these are quotes from the movie. You know how bitchy fags can be.
Of course. I actually winced. I'm like, oh, this is going to hurt. I don't know how this is going to, this does not, although it's funny, by the way.
Oh no, it's the, true.
I don't speak for any group of people, but I have it on good authority through very slight research that the gays love this movie.
Well, this gay does not love this movie, okay. But I'm not done yet. So then there's the line, boobies, 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 who needs them? And then I wrote, huh. And then two lines later, I go, ouch, not Jen. And then that Sanitarium love song, Rendezvous, was one of the most painful things ever. It was like young Frankenstein putting on the Ritz, kind of bad, but at least that was funny.
Exactly. That had that, like, it was a cringy comedy. This was not comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's all the notes I have for this movie. Cause that was all the ink I wanted to waste on it.
Can you characterize what Jesse's reaction to this movie was?
I think he checked out after about 15, 20 minutes. He was giggling more at what I was texting you. Because I kept showing him, because I was so annoyed at this movie and you for making me watch it. I don't think he has a real high opinion. I would ask him, but I don't want to have to make him relive it, because God knows I wouldn't want to relive it. So you've seen this more than once.
Yeah.
Why?
Again, compared to Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, this is a great movie.
Well, I will not be watching that.
Yeah, no, so you should.
I'm warning you in advance. You can put that on the list. It will be the night that you do a solo show.
Okay, well, that was originally on your list, but you may cross it off.
It was not on my list. Beyond I didn't put Valley it on there.
I'm pretty sure it was on your list.
I am positive it was not on my list.
All right.
I haven't seen this one. Why would I put the second one on?
Well, the second one is in no way related to this one.
Well, regardless.
So, what's your verdict?
I don't know. I almost don't want to give it an F, just because I don't think that it's not bad enough to be an F, but it's not any more than a D. I don't know.
Lee Grant saves it from being a failure.
Yeah, that's part of it. I would largely say this is incomplete. This just didn't complete the,
50 years later, incomplete.
Yeah. So, yeah, this one's not going to walk at graduation, but then again,
Neither is Tony.
Yeah, exactly. Ba-dum-bum. So, D is as high as I can go. And I know Brother Drew's happy he's not doing this. And also, I'm wishing we could have just Kubo'd the whole thing. So.
Well, we started off Kubo'ing it, but then I had to, because the story is a classic tale, soap opera type.
It wasn't good enough to be a soap opera.
Well, okay. Peyton Place was supposed to be sort of, I think, I haven't seen one episode of Peyton Place, but I understand that it's about like a New England, it's these old New England families, right? And their kids, and the parents are super repressed about sex, but they are, the kids are like young adult kids. So they're expressing their sexual whatever. So it was very titillating. It was actually like, if you remember, Santa Barbara was a sexy afternoon show.
It was.
It started out with lots of like teenage sex. And eventually it just kind of flattened out into a regular soap opera, but which was fine, of course, because now you know everybody. But yeah, no, I think there was, it wasn't like the first year of Santa Barbara, a lot of like, will she or won't she Kelly Capwell?
I don't know, because most of it was about, it was the murder mystery.
I think it was, maybe it's just my perspective, but it was a lot of, I remember, because I was a teenager at the time, a lot of teenagers were like, oh, I'll watch this soap opera.
Well, because she was very pretty.
Yeah, this has got just enough Robin Wright in scantily clad stuff,
Yeah, so there were three CC Capwells: Peter Mark Richmond, Paul Burke, and Jed Allen.
Okay, so Jed Allen was the third.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, so Patty Duke. Do you know anything about her history?
No.
Okay, Patty Duke had like the worst growing up ever as like a Hollywood kid or performing kid. I don't know if she started in Hollywood. She probably started on the East Coast, but she was a young kid singing, dancing, whatever. Her parents were horrible stage parents. They would do things like make her say she was 2 years younger than she was so that she could look like some sort of wunderkind. She made a lot of money, but her parents basically took it all. She didn't have any money. So then she started, the Miracle Worker. Turns out she's in both versions of the Miracle Worker. One as Helen and one as Anne Frank or whatever the other lady was. Annie DeFranco. Who was the teacher? I knew it last week when we were talking about it. Helen Keller's teacher was...
Annie Sullivan,
yeah. Not Anne Frank. That's all different.
Well, thing. Probably yeah. not.
No. I bet you they both kept diaries, though. So, so Patty Duke struggled with a lot of things, including like drugs and stuff. Like she took all the dolls and stuff to get all hyped up. And if you look at 1972 Emmy Awards for Patty Duke, look it up. 1972 Patty Duke Emmy. And it's like a minute long. Just play her speech.
My Sweet Charlie?
Yes, that's it.
And the winner is in Los Angeles, Patty Duke from My Sweet Charlie.
Oh, she looks strung out.
Thank you. And you. And Damien is Evans. I know you're over there somewhere.
You. She looks uncomfortable.
Mom, happy birthday.
She must be drunk or stoned or both.
I've also been taught not to say thank you for too long. But the best words I've ever learned were hello.
By the way, she was dating Desi Arnaz Jr. at the time. She mentions him.
Enthusiasm.
Lucille Ball didn't like her.
And thank you.
Fuck.
Yeah. So this is not necessarily somebody on drugs or alcohol. This is somebody who hasn't slept in 3 days because she's going through the manic phase of her manic depression bipolar disorder. So it was after this that she was diagnosed and got treatment. And she actually made, later in life, she went on like Barbara Walters and a bunch of other shows like talking about bipolar disorder. You know, about how there are treatments for it and it doesn't have to ruin your life.
I'm fond of her. I've seen her in many other things, including a really ill-fated sitcom, which I adored, where she was the president. So
Yes. Yeah. So she turned out to be a pretty big advocate for mental health, which is great. I mean, obviously, as a mental health consumer, she knew more than your average Joe. But yeah, so she was dealing with all of this stuff. Like the crazy pressures of being a star, at the same time being mentally ill and having drug problems, which it turns out might be a trend in Hollywood / whatever.
So I have sent you a link, which is
an couple of facts.
Click on it. You need to see it. It's okay. It's amazing.
Gossip rumor about Cece Capwell.
Yes.
Cece Capwell, born Channing Crichton Capwell, was a fictional character on the American soap opera Santa Barbara, played longest by Jed Allen, but also played by three other actors. Cece is the town's patriarch, a wealthy businessman, and a father of four. Other prominent characters, Kelly, Eden, Ted, and Mason Capwell.
But keep going. There's way more on that page. More? There's tons more.
Maybe I'm not able to see it from my phone.
Oh. There's a, is Cece Capwell hot or not button? Is Cece Capwell gay or straight button? Are there any photos of Cece Capwell's hairstyle or shirtless?
Okay. Is Cece Capwell still alive? Are there any death rumors?
Does he do drugs? Does he do cigarettes? Does he smoke weed? Why does this exist?
Is Cece Capwell gay or straight? Or
Right now, yeah, I don't know.
What's his net worth in 2019? How much does he earn?
My page reports that he is worth $630,957,344.
That's about right, give or take. Stocks, properties, yachts, private airplanes, luxury goods. That all, you know.
He got one over in the Lockridges, so.
Oh,
you know.
Man.
Anyway, I can't explain why this exists, but it's awesome and terrible at the same time.
Are there any photos of Cece Capwell's hairstyle or shirtless? Are there any photos of him, of his hairstyle or shirtless? That's a weird combination, isn't there?
I don't know why this exists, but supposedly 2019 has been a very big, you should. Supposedly 2019. No, you should.
You're in control of social media.
Supposedly 2019 has been a very busy year for CC. However, we do not have any detailed information.
Yeah.
Maybe you know more. Feel free to add the latest news, gossip, official contact information, such as management, phone number, cell phone number, or email address, and your questions below.
Oh, you know what? I bet you half of the blind items are actually CZ Capwell. What star was having sex with ASAP Rocky when he was in Sweden before he was arrested for assault? CC Capwell. Judging only by his hairstyle and shirtless photos.
I just liked this on Facebook, which I fear will cause me severe repercussions, but I will put the link.
That's awesome.
Anyway, I just stumbled across this just now, and I couldn't be more happy. It almost makes up for this terrible turd of a movie.
Yeah, it's not great, but I think it's historic, maybe. It's a bad movie, and it's a good example of a bad movie. It's a good example of how you could have name brand actors, quality actors, doing horrible performances in a very lush, lavish, expensive, overlong movie.
Yeah, it was long. It was 2 hours long. It was bad.
Well, yeah. They had all of these little plots. And I think, okay, I'm going to hazard a guess that because this was such a big novel, that the director kind of assumed that the people watching it will have read the book as well. So you can kind of fill in the blanks. Like a Gone with the Wind kind of thing.
That probably would have benefited the watching experience much better.
Yeah. Like, you know, that's, again, the problem of adapting a novel is you have to realize you can't tell an entire novel in the course of a movie. Because what is it, like 1 minute per page, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. Stephen King novel would be like 10 years of a TV series.
It'd be like, oh, yeah, it would be awful.
Yeah. So anyway, so housekeeping.
Do I have any housekeeping this week? I don't.
I have an ad.
Went to a charity event last weekend, which was a all-you-can-eat ice cream event.
Yes. Did you find people to take your tickets?
Yes, I did, actually.
Sweet.
So, they were not wasted, so that was good. We were a little underwhelmed by, the actual event, but we did show up later in the day. But again, it was, you know, for charity, so, it is what it is. It was worthwhile for that effect. What else? Let's see. It's getting hot here again, so yay, looking forward to that.
So, what charity was it, by the way? It's like ice cream for Jimmy Legs?
It was actually for the Oregon Female Dairy something.
Oh, okay. But by the way, so I have a friend, a former coworker, who has moved out of state, and she lives in the Midwest. And they had a big windstorm and knocked a ton of trees at her house over. And she's disabled. She has MS. So she was saying, hey, if anybody can come over and help me, we got chainsaws, we just need people. And then she was kind of musing about how she's fine, the dog's fine, blah, blah, blah. She was happy. She got to plug her phone into the USB jack of the WC, and she was glad she upgraded, blah, blah, blah. And of course, I'm dumb. So I'm like, all I can think of is a water closet, but you're not plugging your phone into a toilet. And she's like, ha ha, wheelchair. I'm like, oh, fuck me. But turns out, yeah, I should have known that.
Well, you know what's in your sphere of influence, and we haven't had a lot of electric wheelchairs in our family.
True, but still.
I mean, if there's going to be one, though, we know who will have it.
When you throw out this jargon without explaining it to other people, it's like, turns out she's not explained it to me. Like, oh, fuck.
I have been listening to a podcast called The Hilarious World of Depression.
Oh, who's the host?
John Moe.
Okay, I don't know Mo.
He does interviews of people, comedians or artists who suffer from depression. And it's pretty, I've burned through quite a few episodes, but.
Who are some of the guests, the notable guests? Like if you were to recommend an episode to dive in on.
Margaret Cho.
Okay.
That was a good one. But there's a, I mean, there's a plenty of people, plenty of artists have come on board, and I think her name is Jenny Lawson.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was on. I'm really looking forward to an upcoming episode that is in my queue that I'm going to listen to. That is Scott Thompson.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. So I'm enjoying it. It makes me feel very much like I need therapy. So that's alarming.
What's it called? The Wonderful World of Depression?
The Hilarious World of Depression. It's fun. It's fun to listen to and interesting and entertaining and educating. So I've been enjoying that. What else have I been listening to? I downloaded the Mr. Rogers book, and I'm struggling to get through that. So
I hate when you have to struggle. I downloaded a book on fascism, and I want to start it, but I don't want to start it.
Don't worry, it'll start you.
That's a problem.
Podcast-wise, that's been the top of list. The Brexit cast has been pretty... I've been catching up on that. And
so what's your prediction? They're going to no-deal bailout? Crash out of Brexit?
I really don't know. At this point, I can't see them... Well, I think it's unpredictable. There's no way for me to predict it because there's just... I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen. I mean, I really think that it's 50-50. I think that they will try to come to a deal-ish, but they will try and get some kind of compromise that will be nobody's victory and everybody's turmoil, but it will be milquetoasty and right middle of the road. So,
if that happens, and again, I don't know much about much, but from what I can tell, if Boris Johnson wants to keep his job, which he has wanted to do his whole life, it appears, he will have to probably make some sort of deal. The problem is, if he makes a deal, he then violates his campaign promise.
Yeah.
And if he can't possibly... make everybody happy. That's the problem. And he doesn't have a large enough coalition that if they call an election, he's not going to win. He'll maybe be a prime minister for 3 months. So, you know, Brexit may just be the necklace that people get before they get booted out of office, you know?
Yeah. What else? Dad was super happy that we're all on board for McCarthy. So
good.
So I suspect you're going to hear about that.
Excellent.
From him.
Yeah. No, we're all on board. Yeah. Well, the only thing I have for housekeeping is an ad. Okay. And it's an advertisement that everybody can take advantage of. I hope everybody listening can take advantage of it. I think so. I think everybody has this opportunity. I know the U.S. is a good place for this sort of thing, but I would be willing to bet that England, France, Norway, who else? Japan, Mexico, those listeners. I'm probably leaving somebody out. I apologize. If I left you out, send us an email to eric@.nerqpua, and I will give you a personal shout-out. Your local library. Like, I just got a library card last week for the first time in maybe 20 years or more.
Oh, wow.
And... here's what I knew that the library had media, but the way our library works is you can take out up to 50 books at a time if you want, which is a lot of books, but you could take a combination of 50 books. But in that, you can actually take out 5 videos at the same time. And they have thousands of videos, and you know, there's a bunch of branch libraries around town, and I can put a hold on up to 10 things and have them sent from other branches to my closest branch. I can basically shop online for movies, pick them up, not talk to anybody because they're just pre-pulled and held for me. You actually use like a kiosk thing to check things out anyway. I am digging it. Actually, not only in the last week did I check out 10 different movies, but I also, and one of them is actually, okay, one of them is an Argentinian Spanish language horror movie. One of them is a Rory Culkin movie about, I think it's called The Lords of Chaos. It's about the Norwegian black metal and like that whole black metal stabbings and stuff from Until the Light Takes Us. If you're not familiar with the documentary Until the Light Takes Us, fantastic documentary. But it talks about Norwegian black metal, which is different than Swedish death metal. And some murders and church burnings and stuff. Also, I took out a bunch of graphic novels. Basically, I'm reading comic books, which is sort of fun. I took out some books for my daughter, who likes to read also. But, you know, so I guess we could go into the library and look more carefully. But so, yeah.
People.
So, I mean, I already pay through for my taxes, right? I mean,
yeah.
I like, again, I'm a tax and spend liberal. I pay for services. I'm happy to use them. So why not get the most out of them? And because now they've had, you know, years and years and years to collect all these materials, a lot of which are donated. There's a ton of movies that are like out of print right now, but I can pick up at a local library.
Nice. Well, the other advantage, if you have a library card and it's affiliated, is you can download for your iPhone, and I think Android as well, the Libby app, which is you can borrow audiobooks.
Yes. Yep. You can download audiobooks. There's a bunch of digital things. You can download ebooks.
Yeah, so yes, you can. I've done both.
You get a license for however many days. Yeah, it's amazing. So I'm telling you, take advantage of your local library.
Yeah.
It provides a lot of services. And I'm going to be donating movies to them, too. I mean, I'm looking through my movie collection if I've got stuff that I want to get rid of. Rather than donate them to, like, say, a Goodwill or one of those places, I just take it to the library. Let everybody enjoy them. Although, yeah. It's for some reason, Netflix does not have Bride of Chucky, and I'm going through the Chucky movies. I know, it's a weird thing. And nobody seems to have Bride of Chucky. It's the most popular of the movies, but oh well, I'll find it. But it's not on Shudder, and it's not on Amazon, and it's not on Netflix, so I don't know. And unless I see it for cheap, I'm not going to buy it. You could buy the whole like Chucky 5-movie series or 6-movie series for like $30, but it's like that's right on the edge of too much to pay for movies that I will be the only one watching.
Yeah, I get that.
But yeah, no, let me just tell you, the library. Check it out. Ba-dum-bum-psh.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson, so sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.